Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And, it's if you're currently in the Southeast, it's the end of the world.
Yes, so. It is. And Logan feels fine about it. Logan feels fine.
I mean,
just like the song.
Yeah. Ripley's not happy because it's been raining nonstop. Mm-hmm. And like, dude, it's so funny. It's not funny. It's kind of upsetting for her, but it's funny to me. Like, she wants to go out. Like, she's like, since yesterday, like mid-afternoon, it's been like, I want to go. She'll go to the door. I'm like, okay. Uh-huh. And I'll put the leash on her and I'll open the door and then she'll walk out and then she'll look around and then she'll look at me and then she'll just turn around and walk back inside. And I'm like, I feel your pain, but like, what do you want me to do about this?
I know.
Like, I have a small awning at the front of my house, so there's a little area where it's not like pouring down rain. And finally this morning she was just like, she's like, I gotta go. So she walked like carefully across the awning, under the awning, did her business, and then just stared out longingly into the the yard, like, why is it raining? Like, what is this? She hates the water so much, man.
Oh, that's funny, dude. That's, I mean, there has to be some kind of like humor in all of this. Like, I mean, you know, like if you were to take social media reports, like literally, it is the end of days for people in Florida. To which I'm like, well, you know, that's karma for you motherfuckers. But anywho, like, we're not here to talk about that shit. We're here to talk about, I guess we're having another hodgepodge. So guys, if we're talking football by the end of it, and it's like a 2-hour long conversation about football, because we're realistically a football podcast masquerading as a pop culture podcast.
Yeah. At least for a few months of the year.
Exactly. Exactly.
Which we're right at 2 years of doing this. Like,
yeah,
I think this, like, is right around the 2-year mark.
Yeah, which is like, you know, that's kind of amazing. Like, it is, but it isn't. I mean, it's like, it's so easy to do this, like, for us. Like, it's just like, all right, let's just talk whatever's on deck. Though this week we have not seen Wild Robot, and I think that we're, like, me and my wife are going to go see it because, you know, I need a good cry in the middle of a theater. But other than that, I mean, there's some streaming stuff, I guess. I mean, I've seen a couple of things that are coming out today already. But I mean, it's kind of slim pickings right now until October, when the Jokerning, or whatever the hell you want to call it, happens next week. I did have a question for you. Two of them. They kind of go hand in hand. So news drops that the digital version of Deadpool Wolverine will be officially available to buy as of October 1st. And then we just found out also Alien Romulus is available October 15th. But here's the weird thing. The 4K for both of them, it's very strange. So, like, you have Romulus on the 15th, right? But then their 4K Blu-ray physical media release isn't available until December 3rd. But Deadpool Wolverine is like 2 weeks later, like October 22nd or something like that. Yeah. They're from the same company. They're fucking from Disney. But the dates are so randomly wild. And I cannot figure out for the life of me, why the fuck would you do this? Like, one of them, like, and it's weird because I think it's Fox Movies, because I had to wait, like, fucking the latest Apes movie, the new trilogy that they started.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was a long time coming.
Right?
Like, for a movie that was out of theaters for a while before it was available.
Like, literally, like it was, it didn't, like, it was out of theaters and on Hulu. It was on fucking Hulu, like, 2 weeks after the digital download, which I feel like Romulus is going to be, right? But it's, like, it took months, and it was, like, neither one of them had, like, the special features, which is what I want. And, like, I just wanted to ask you, are you gonna, like, for me, I can wait. Like, I can wait till the releases happen, the physical media, because here's the thing I don't think that everybody realizes is that the physical releases come with digital downloads. So you don't have to pay the money to, like, as long as you can wait it out a little bit, you get all the special features, you get better picture and sound because it's from the disc and not streaming. Like, you know, like they say 4K, but really, is it really 4K or is it 10K? Is it 1080p? Yeah. It's really more like glorified 1080p. And I just wanted to ask you, are you a guy that's going, like, are going to go whole hog into digital and physical media? Or are you going to be, are you going to be
Doing the digital thing for a while. Mostly just because of, like, space issues. Mm-hmm. But I mean, really when I actually had this conversation with a guy from work the other night. Cause he was like, oh, I do all digital. Like, he's like, I get the digital downloads or if it's something that he deems too expensive, I'm sure he, you know, finds his way around.
His means.
Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, I felt that way until like these companies decided like, we're going to make it where physical media, like, we're just going to make it not a thing anymore. And
yeah.
Best Buy stopped selling it, and Walmart really trimmed down. Target's not selling it. I was like, it bummed me out and kind of freaked me out. So I've been on a real physical media kick lately, which I get it, but part of me is also like, since it's the people are trying to kill it, it's not getting cheaper. It's actually getting more expensive.
It really is.
So, I was gonna buy Inside Out 2 just because I am a Pixar fan. I have almost every Pixar, even the ones I haven't seen, on Blu-ray. And so I was like, well, I'm gonna buy Inside Out 2. And like, I went to go grab a copy at probably Walmart, because that's really the only place around here that sells it. At least brand new. And it was like $35 or $30 or something for the Blu-ray. And I was like, what?
Yeah, right? Like, so
it's not even a Blu-ray DVD copy, it's just a Blu-ray with a digital copy.
And that's what I wanted to bring up, which was, is like the cost of the physical media. Like, yeah, like, okay, so like Alien Romulus,
production has not gotten more expensive. The producing of the discs is actually cheaper now than it's ever been.
It's just, it's them trying to make it impossible for, like, and this is the thing that pisses me off, is that they're trying to make it impossible. Like, there are a few, like, places that, like, we still have the boutique labels. Like, let's be honest, like, places like Shout Factory, Screen Factory, Criterion, Severin, Arrow Video. Like, there are these places that if you wait a couple of years, they're going to bring out a spectacular edition of, like, a movie that, like, you know, that may have been just released. But, like, you're paying a premium for them because they're producing great content for that disc. Like, I looked at the features on both of the Romulus and the Deadpool Wolverine discs, and 10 years ago, bro, we would be laughing at this. We'd be like, what is this shit? Oh, they just decided to skimp out on special features, I guess.
Yeah.
Because they're anemic. And I'm just like, so, like, I saw the pre-sale on the Romulus 4K, and it was $49.95. And I'm like, oh, so you're deciding to charge me for the 4K, the Blu-ray, and the digital download all at once. Now I know if I just wait until Black Friday or like, you know, Cyber Monday or whatever you want to call it on Amazon, I'll probably be able to get the pre-sale for like $24.95 for that one. And Deadpool Wolverine, I guarantee you it's going to do gangbusters, and like the physical release. And by Black Friday, I'll be able to get it for $19.99 on 4K, right? But it's like the time now is gone when, you remember like on Tuesdays, you go to fucking Best Buy and you pick up the DVD or Blu-ray of whatever new releases that you wanted, and you could pay literally on DVD if you wanted it $14.95, and then the DVD was, or the Blu-ray was always like $20. That was it, right? Like that was,
yeah, the or if it had like some, you know, like the steel books were always around $35-$40. Yes. If they had those, or you know, when it was booming, like every store had their own little like special edition. And yep, like that was fine. But yeah, like basic, like it was like $20-$25. And yeah, it's so frustrating. So I've been every few weeks I've been going to McKay's and just like spending a couple hours like browsing through there, which I know I've talked about before, but McKay's is used like reseller here. I'll just browse through their used media stuff and look for things that like there's a lot of stuff I want, but I try to just keep it to stuff that's like, oh, I know that that's something that's going to be tough to come across. Like last week, I meant to send you a picture. Last week, I found the Blu-ray, I forget who put it out, you'll probably know, of Steel Dawn, the Patrick Swayze, sci-fi-ish, whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Shout out to fucking Ryan, dude. Shout out to Ryan. That was one of his favorites. Fucking no. I love that fucking movie. And that's, how much did you pick it up for? Like $10?
$5.
Fucking hell, dude. Yeah. That is a Blu-ray great for $5. Movie.
And just like, okay. Yeah. Like this is something that I don't run across. They had a copy of Blade Trinity. We'd been talking about Blade. They had the Blade Trinity Blu-ray. But like part of me was like, just suck it up and get it anyway. But it was one of those that like, you know, those companies that they'll sell them. But like the case is like, they do that thing where they like cut a notch in the case.
Oh, man. Yes. They drill a hole into it or something.
And it's like through the actual insert. And I'm like, man, like it was $12, which wasn't terrible. But I was like, I just don't want to pay $12 for something that has, like, it's one thing if the case is damaged, I can replace the case. But, like, the insert's damaged, and I'm like, I know I'm being way too picky, but also, like, I don't want to pay, like, for a damaged copy, even if I have to pay $25 or $30 for a pristine copy, you know?
Exactly. No.
If it's, like, $5... Okay, like I might just be like, well, this will do until I, like, if I come across another copy. But yeah, I mean, $12 or $13. I'm like, I don't know. I also picked up, which they didn't have season one, and I sucked it up and ordered it on used on Amazon anyway. There were steelbook editions of the Sarah Connor Chronicles, season one and two, and they had season two for like $8.
Oh shit. Yeah, dude.
Yeah. And I picked that up and I was like, fuck, I wish I had season one. It's like, I wonder how much I can get a copy for. And I looked it up on Amazon. It was like $20. And I was like, fuck it. Like, I'm just going to order it.
Exactly. Well, like when you think about it, if together with tax, you paid $16 for each one,
which
got a steelbook edition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that show was phenomenal.
Oh, dude, like I always tell people, like, they always ask me, like, what's the best Terminator? Like, you know, people always ask these weird-ass questions, like, what's the best Terminator thing that isn't T2 in T1? And I always tell them Sarah Connor Chronicles, because it is. I mean, where else are you going to get, like, the lead singer of Garbage, Shirley Manson, as a Terminator, like literally a Terminator. Brian Austin Green playing Kyle Reese's brother, like, and doing it very well. Like, that's the thing that I don't think that people really understand, is that this show was so good that James Cameron looked at it and took the main, like, showrunner, Josh Friedman, and put him on the team that is writing all 20 Avatar movies.
Yeah.
Like, that's how good that series is that he looked at it and he went, well, these motherfuckers are doing something right here on this TV show. And just hire them. I love that show. I fucking love that show. I own that. I don't own the steel.
It only got canceled because of the fucking movies, because they had that movie coming out and like the studio heads were like, well, we don't want to confuse people and we're just going to end the show. And like, it's such bullshit, man.
Yep. That stupid McG movie. Oh God. Don't even get me started on that. Like, my favorite part is about that McG movie is that you cast Sam Worthington as a Terminator. What? And then you have Anton Yelchin as Kyle Reese. Like the casting in that, it's a big movie and I appreciate that and everything, but man, like give me, that's the weakest of the Terminator movies. Like give me T3 Rise of the Machines, because at least it has Arnold in it. Right.
Yeah.
Over that one, like Genisys, which I still fucking, it's like, you call it Genisys? Oh my God. And then the most recent one, the only reason to watch that one is because of Linda Hamilton being in it. You know, it's the James Cameron apology movie.
Did you see what he said recently in an interview? So I don't know why he's been doing all these interviews. But A, he's weirdly pro AI. In a way that you think, but like he's definitely not like I get it, like he sees what it can be. Like I don't think he's advocating for like, yeah, we'll just replace the creatives with AI. It's more of a like, hey, it's a tool the way like spell check is a fucking tool. But somebody asked him about the Terminator franchise and like he went on this spiel about like there's still a lot of things that can be a lot of stories that can be told there. And he said, but they now is the absolute time you have to jettison like constantly retelling the stories of those specific characters. Like it can be a big universe. It's not just the Connors. And we have to like just jettison that. That needs to be done with. And like I mean, he's not wrong.
No, he's really not wrong. I mean, like that's actually kind of nice for him to say that, though. Like, you know, like maybe he should have been involved with like T3, T4, T5, and T6 and had done that, because quite literally his last movie that he produced with Tim Miller, who, you know, to take it back to Deadpool and to Deadpool Wolverine, directed the first Deadpool, and literally like here's the wild ass thing is that motherfucker left Deadpool 2 to do Sonic, which he didn't end up doing, ended up doing Terminator. It's like, what? Like, and then the script was just, oh man, like, it's wild to think, like, I always tell people, there are only two movies and one series that involve the Terminator. Like, that's it. That's all there is. There's nothing else, because the series leads perfectly into T2. Or from T2, like perfectly. You know, I'm just like,
Anything. Well, I shouldn't say anything past. I still haven't watched the anime, although I've heard nothing but good things.
It's okay. It's just like, I watched the first two episodes, and it definitely does what has suggested, which is it's telling a different story. It's just, I don't know if Terminator and anime work together. Like, I stopped watching it after three episodes because, like, that was my problem. It was like, I was like, I don't know if the style and the movies work together. Like, okay, so, like, just as a baseline, guys, I am so in the bag for this animated Lord of the Rings, like, thing.
Really?
More. Oh, yeah. Like, more than.
I'm not laughing. Like, it looks fine. I think I'm just not a Lord of the Rings guy. I think that's the problem.
Yeah, I mean, like, you've very much proven, you know, like, I mean, I listened to some of the podcasts that you guys did for Lord of the Rings. I'm like, or like, just general discussions about Lord of the Rings. And I was like, yeah, you're just not that dude, which is okay. Like, that's fine. Not everybody loves Hobbits hugging Hobbits. Like, you know, it's like, you know, like the little weed smoking dudes that go on adventures. I mean, it's not for everybody, right? But I'm more in the bag for like the Lord of the Rings version of like anime than I am actually of their this live action. Oh man, like, I don't know. Like, it looks like fan
season
fiction to
two
me.
Has gotten like rave fucking reviews, and I think the finale is this week. So,
Are you guys going to cover it, or is it just one of those things?
I doubt it. I can't get any of my other co-hosts to break away from their, which I'm not knocking them. I get it. Like, yeah, you have spouses and kids, but like, mm-hmm, they every time it's like, yeah, we were going to talk some Agatha all along. And, mm-hmm, Elizabeth was like, yeah, I'm going to watch it. And then I never heard from her. I just she'll send me messages. They both, her and Jacob both, and Jess sometimes too, will send me messages. I'm like, yeah, I'm not gonna rag you. I'm not gonna like hound you about recording.
Yeah.
Cause then I feel like an asshole. Like, you know, and also like, I mean, I get it, but I'm constantly getting ghosted. Like, yeah, we'll do something this weekend. And I'm like, when? Or like, hey, I'm free Saturday. Like, okay, that sounds good. And then I never hear from them. So it's like, oh yeah, I forgot something came up. I'm like, yeah, you know, not to be a jerk, but like, you know, I could be doing anything. Like, probably I am just sitting at home watching TV, but like, I don't want to be beholden to that. So I'm like, I just, I'm done having, like, if you message me and say, hey, I'm free, are you free? Then if I'm free, we'll work it out. If not, then like, I guess, you know, it's just not meant to be. But anyway, that's not beside the point. But yeah, I'm Cameron's going back to the Terminator thing.
Cameron, yeah.
And I think maybe Alien Romulus kind of is a good template for that. It's,
yeah, that's what I was gonna say,
because like, it does have ties to all of the other to the franchise as a whole, but it's not like, part of the problem with Alien Resurrection is like, honestly, if you take the like, oh, we cloned Ripley and put alien DNA, like if you take all of that out, I have less of a problem with that movie.
Yes.
Because then it's just an alien story. It's not part of Ripley's story. Like, that's what's really frustrating about that movie.
Well, yeah, because then it makes it about, like, the problem is that, like, for me, with the, like, Romulus forced me to confront, like, the, like, what I felt was the problem with certain films in the trilogy or in the series. And the thing is that what my problem was is that it went from being an alien franchise to a Ripley franchise. And like, and then it became this thing where it became an android franchise and not an alien franchise in the hands of Ridley Scott.
Yeah. He took it back and we were like, oh good. And then what he wound up being obsessed with is this, like, it was like, oh, I don't get to make my Blade Runner stuff, so
yeah,
I'm going to make this instead.
Yeah.
And it's like, you, but this is like, if it was, even if it wasn't about the alien, like the xenomorph, like, it was still less about the space jockeys, which is what we were all kind of sort of excited for anyway. And more about David as a character with like all this other stuff as kind of background noise. And it just, you know, it's not that it was bad. It just wasn't what we thought it was gonna be.
Yeah. It was very like, and again, like it's like you said, like it's very analogous to the Terminator franchise, where it's like it's always about the Connors, right?
I mean, look at where Star Wars is. Like,
yep, we're reconciling with the Skywalkers.
Yeah,
like not one.
We're
fucking
still
family.
Doing it, and not that they haven't tried to do things outside of that. It's just that it seems like they don't know what to do.
Well, it's almost like they're letting it fail. Like the difference between Alien Romulus and something like, say, the Acolyte is that Ridley is like seriously involved with Feedy and giving him the boost he needs to make an alien movie that feels like a fucking alien movie, but and doesn't have the characters other than one side tangential character.
And it's not afraid to be, and I know it's a rated R property, but it's not afraid to get really out there and ballsy. Like the Acolyte doesn't, the problem with the Acolyte is it doesn't do enough different.
Exactly. Like it feels like I did some like rewatching of it, and it feels like it's very weird because like you watch it and it's like, oh, that's what they're doing. And they very simply just took Star Wars and made it Game of Thrones. Because if you really watch that show, it's literally the Game of Thrones model, because like literally at the third to last episode, they do Red Wedding. They just do Red Wedding and kill every single character that you've come to know. Even though it's a very, like, it's adhering to its story, and that's what Game of Thrones does. It doesn't save its hero characters.
But it doesn't, I would have been okay with that if it would have been ballsy enough to really get into that. But it only, it still only hints at things. Like, if you're going to give us this story of, like, the Jedi are not always, and like Lucas has been doing that, like was doing that already. Yes. Like the Jedi are not the fucking heroes you always think they are. Like there's two sides to every story. Yeah. Watch the Clone Wars. There's a reason Ahsoka walks away from the Jedi Order. Like she's not in the wrong. They are, you know, Obi-Wan Kenobi, like a character that everybody loves, and I know like people close to me get a little upset when I'm, and it's not that I don't like Obi-Wan Kenobi, but it's like you cannot tout him as this perfect hero because like he's lying all the time.
Yep. From a certain point of view, is still just pathologically lying.
Yeah. And so but going back to the Acolyte, it doesn't do enough to show us like that darker, like the Jedi walking that line and thinking that they're right. And like, it just hints at things, and that just makes it more frustrating because they're pulling punches. Like you don't have the balls to do what you set up to do. Feedy, like when he submitted the script, like one of the things they talked, or actually I think it was after they finished shooting, one of the things, one of the notes he got was, we don't think that the birth scene, like any, like all of that, we don't think you need that. And that just, he said that convinced him that he absolutely needed that.
Yes.
And don't get me wrong, like I do feel like that's not my favorite part of that movie, and I'm like, oh shit, like, and that may be a bridge too far, but it's also not something that I would sit here and go like, yeah, you need to cut that out, because like it's part of his vision, and like it's also the movie really going for this like crazy batshit like thing, and also pulling in stuff from both Alien Resurrection and Prometheus and Covenant, you know?
Yep.
So yeah, like I would rather watch them really go for it and kind of trip than just be like setting up all of this stuff and half-heartedly executing it, which still, it still feels like a failure. And
yeah,
like all of these franchises, Prey did something different. Romulus did something different. It's something the different. Same,
yep.
But it's different, you know? And
exactly.
Like these are the templates, and both of those movies were really successful. So mm-hmm.
Some would say reinvigorated franchises.
Yeah.
Because like, and that's okay. So like the thing to me is that if Cameron's really speaking this speak, then we need them to find a director that's the equivalent of Feige for the Terminator franchise. And by that, I mean somebody who has like, you know, like Cameron, like Feige is the kind of like the template where it's like he stayed in like the low budget arena. Like even when he made his, like even when he had like breakthrough hits like Evil Dead and Don't Breathe, like he still was not pushed into studio filmmaking. I mean, he kind of did with the girl who kicked the hornet's nest, which like I will tell you, like it is kind of like Romulus 0.05 in that it's testing the waters in what he'd like to do with a franchise. Like it's actually kind of weirdly a great action film. Like you don't think that it's going to be, but then it turns out to be like having all of these physical practical stunts. Claire Foy is just terribly cast. Like he was saddled with Claire Foy because of the Crown or whatever fucking Netflix Emmy suck off mess that she was a part of. No offense to Claire Foy. She's actually a great actress, but it missed the point, right? Like I would have been more excited if they had somehow brought back Rooney Mara, or like, you know, gotten what's her name to star in it, the one that was in Prometheus that
I can't think of her name.
Good Lord, what is her name? Like I really like her too. Good Lord. What is her name? Noomi Rapace. Like if they had brought either one of them back and not had Claire Foy, like we probably wouldn't have Alien Romulus, because he would have been doing like four other fucking Girl Who movies, right? The Millennium Trilogy. It would have been like he would have kickstarted to something, because it's kind of kick ass if you take Claire Foy out of the situation and her weird tomboy cut. But you need somebody like that to kickstart the Terminator franchise. Somebody who is protected but has a unique vision for the Terminator, whatever it is, and just go into it. Not some studio gunslinger, not some like A24 guy, like a true kind of like indie guy who like has been working it and has like understands how film, like, you know, how a film production works, but also isn't afraid to go, fuck it, I can go back to my fucking small movies. Because that's what it felt like with Feige. With everything that I've read, everything that he talked about, it felt like he had this, okay, I don't give a fuck. Like, you want to do this? That's fine. We'll do this. But if you fuck with my vision, if you fuck with it, I'll just walk away and I'll go back to small films, because I've been to the high highs and I went back to the low lows, and I actually prefer the low lows. And like, it kind of like it just would inform, like just like the choice that Feedy made to make sure that they were physically shooting someplace, and like Ridley Scott backing him up on that, going, yes, absolutely, he should do that. Let him do that. Let him make this movie. I just don't know who it would be, because Cameron is such a fucking, he's such a titan and a colossus that if he's involved, it's going to be whatever he wants, right? Because you're going to get somebody like Tim Miller, which I don't want. Like, you know, I mean, maybe not.
Like, if somebody came with a small budget idea that he really appreciated, like, mm-hmm. you know, I could see him getting behind that, because like the Terminator is like the first one is this like low budget, like thriller horror combo thing. Like Terminator 2, like at the time, was the most expensive movie ever made, mostly because they spent a lot of fucking money on that CGI. And it shows, like that shit still holds up. Like him walking through the bars is still cool as shit, man. I think if somebody had the right idea, like I think he'd get behind it, but maybe that's why he's like putting it out there, like, hey, now is the time to leave those characters behind and maybe try to find a new story and explore a bigger world. And, you know, like, I don't know, it would be kind of cool to see a Terminator movie where it's like, oh, Skynet decided the best thing to do was not kill her, but like fucking send a Terminator back to like kill her grandmother or like some shit like that. Like, I know that's still those characters, but you're getting far enough away from like it's the Sarah Connor, John Connor of it all. You know, a Terminator in the 40s is kind of interesting. So.
A Terminator in the 70s is kind of interesting.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, what about a Terminator in like, so. Like, okay, so like, here's my concept. Here's my $5 pitch, which is that I know this is going to sound wild, but why not set it in some place like South America where people really don't like. So the concept is like Terminator ultimately, like I think we've literally lost the, like, you know, we've literally lost the concept here, which is it's about somebody who doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things, right? Like, they are inconsequential to this world, but they are absolutely consequential because of what they are going to become in the future. Why not set it in, like do the whole reboot, but set it in, like, say, South America, and some woman who's, like, a cleaner or something, or somebody who's just, like, a mother, and she's just living her life, workaday in Brazil, and this happens to her. Like, it still remains low budget, but it also gives a recontextualization that anybody can be anything in the world, and you don't know it.
Flip the script and do a story a la, like, kind of like Prey, where it's not called The Terminator. Yep. And instead of having, like, the story told from, like, a Terminator point of view, like, have it be, like, the human sending somebody back in time to not to save somebody, but to kill somebody, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? And then like the Terminators having to stop them, like you reframe it as like the humans are like terrorists and the Terminators saving somebody, but like also, you know, like maybe they send somebody back to kill Miles Dyson. And then the Terminator's mm-hmm. coming back to save Miles Dyson. And, like, that adds some, like, I don't know. I mean, I know we did the killing Miles Dyson story already in Terminator 2.
Yeah.
But, like, you know what I mean? Where it's just like,
yes.
The humans are terrorists, but the AI eventually becomes, like, robotic overlords that destroys humanity. I don't know what the, like, this movie is morally complicated, and that at least makes it interesting. And it, like, I hopefully somebody will stand up and be like, a la Fede Alvarez, Dan Trachtenberg, just be like, you know what? Like, I have like a kernel of an idea, and let's see what we can do with it. That isn't Sarah Connor and John Connor. You know,
and keep it to like, and here's the thing, like, keep it to one night, like the Terminator. Like, the Terminator is like told, I think, over two or three nights, but it's a very compact story.
Yeah.
And keep away from the future, like, only have very small bits of the future, because that's what made, like, to me, like, the Terminator, the original, is a, it is like the prime example of how you make a low budget, high concept movie, right? Like, it's about time travel, but it's never about time travel. It's about the future, but it's set in the present. It's about technology, but it's so fucking lo-fi. The only thing that you, like, there's only moments, brief moments, where you see technology, but again, they just kind of lost the fucking, they lost the point, they lost the fucking, the road that they need to go on, and they just kind of need to readjust. And I hope they do. Like, it would be nice to see something surprising, like you said. Trachtenberg and Alvarez are definitely, like, the future is bright for those franchises because of those guys. And because Fox, or 20th Century Studios, I'm sorry, has given, like, it looks like with this second Predator movie, has given Trachtenberg the keys and allowed him to do whatever he wants to do. Like, that is a lot, like, that is something that's like that's not normal, but it's also like absolutely the thing you fucking do, right? Like, right now, I guarantee you they are negotiating with Fede Alvarez to bring him back, but also he's probably pushing back and saying, you see, my shit worked, so you let me and Ridley do whatever we want to do, and I will tell you the next story, but it's not going to be what you think it's going to be, and I don't want to do that. And I hope that that's what it is, because like I said, like Romulus, the box office didn't indicate, but also, you know, after two movies, I mean, where they kind of switch you,
it was way more successful than they ever thought it was going to be.
Oh, yeah, because it started off as a fucking Hulu movie, and it's kind of like it ascended to something like as a like it made it to a point to where it was like it was like for like, I mean, it made money. It didn't make a lot of money, but also, you know, the last two Alien franchise movies were really big baits and switches. Like, I know that I love Ridley, but Ridley has a lot to answer for those two movies, just because of like the whole Android David situation.
Just like Resurrection. It's like, it's not, I think the second one is a little bit more forgivable than the end of the first one. The end of the first one is terrible. Yeah. But it's the, like, what you're telling us you're doing, and then what we get, it's like, this is not, I feel like I got sold a bad set of goods. Like,
yeah, no, absolutely. Like, the expiration date, it's like, oh man, I want to buy these apples. I've been craving apples. And then you look at every single one of them is past the expiration date. They're just a little moldy, and you're like, I don't want to fucking eat this. God damn it. Why did you tell me that these were perfect apples? And it's my fault. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. It's my fault that I expected you to sell me fucking perfect apples. You know, it'll be interesting. I'm actually kind of looking forward to the 4K for the Terminator, even though everybody, like, you know, is like so upset about the Abyss and True Lies one that they're already fucking super upset about this new Terminator 4K. But I'm gonna tell you this: I didn't throw away my discs. So I still have my discs. Like, I still have a copy of, it's the theatrical cut, but I still do have a pristine digital 1080p version of Abyss. I'm not going to tell you where I got it from, but I still have like the original, like, you know, what do they call it? The original transfer, right? Like the theatrical transfer, not this AI thing. Same with True Lies. I have a 1080p copy. It may not be a disc, but it's a digital one. And if I wanted to go ahead and watch that, I could. Same thing with the Terminator. Like, I have the old copy. I have the old versions of the transfers. It's not like it's a big deal. Anywho, it's all to say, keep your fucking physical media, guys. That's the big like thing for me, is that, you know, it's like I have a massive collection, and you, like, you're amassing one too. And it's kind of nice when you go, you know what, I really want to watch this movie, and you know you have it on physical, and then you look online just to see, just for the convenience of watching it on streaming, right? Because, like, I mean, let's be honest, I'm a lazy fuck. Sometimes I don't want to go dig through the collection. But when I don't see it on streaming, it's like, oh, fuck it, I guess I'm going to have to pick it up. Like, it's like Blade. Like, Deadpool and Wolverine came out, and wouldn't you know, none of the streaming fuckers had Blade or any of the Blade movies. You would think that they would have sold it so that they could, but no, they want you to buy it or rent it on streaming. They don't want you to just watch it on their app. But guess what? I had Blade. I had Blade 2, and I had Blade 3, or Blade Trinity. So yeah, I could just go into my
collection. I hate myself for getting rid of them.
Like, but you know what? You can always buy it, because, like, you can always go to, like, you know, you can always go to McKay's and get it, or, you know, eventually, like, I guarantee you Walmart will have them.
Yeah.
Like, eventually they'll bust them out and spit them out, and they'll be $5 with a special lenticular case, like they always promote. Like, you know, get this version, this variant, but it's like it, but it's, that's the example, right? Is like, this is why you buy physical media, is that eventually it's not going to be on streaming. Like, y'all think that it's going to be around for streaming. It's the reason why I paid a boatload of money for Trachtenberg's Prey, because it was a physical copy, because eventually Hulu will not have that on there. Like, it's the thing that bothers me about certain movies. I we've talked about Rebel Ridge, right? Like, the Netflix movie. It's a fucking amazing movie. I fucking loved that movie. Don Johnson is like, I love that he's in his dirtbag era. Like, even that stupid boat show, I kind of want to see, just because he's a dirtbag. He looks like a dirtbag seaboat captain. He's Captain Stubby, but he's Captain Dirtbag Stubby.
Yeah.
Like, the first thing I thought about when I watched Rebel Ridge, after I watched Rebel Ridge, was, I was like, fuck, I want that in 4K. I want that on Blu-ray. I want it on some kind of physical media. But guess what? It's Netflix. Oh, well, I guess I just don't have it. I guess I'll never have it. And if Netflix, like, you know, Netflix decides that it doesn't want to have it on their system, like on their app, they just don't have to have it on their app. Not to say that they'd ever do that. I mean, you know, like, there's millions of things on, literally millions of items on there now. Like, things that I've seen, like, from 10 years ago that still haven't gone away. The non-licensed stuff, the stuff that they produce. But it's all to say, it's like, eventually things stop. Like, I think that Xennials and, like, burgeoning film fans are really not understanding. Like, they just get mad. They don't understand, like, oh, you know what? Maybe you should get a Blu-ray player. Maybe you should spend the money to get a Blu-ray player. It's not that much money. I mean, like, what are they called? Like, even 4Ks now are super inexpensive. You can get one for, like, $100. But then that gives you access. Like, I mean, like, a thing that we don't talk about is library. Like, you can rent Blu-rays and DVDs from your library for free. For free! Like, they may not have a great collection, or they may have a great collection. You don't know until you actually try and go over there. Instead of, like, spending the $12 to rent something, go to your library, go online to see if your library has it. The library actually has a streaming app. I think we've talked about Canopy. Yeah. And it's not like they have shit on there. Like, they have, like, recent releases. They have 2024 releases on there. And it's good stuff. It's just, it's weird. It's weird how, like, people complain about, like, you know, the whole thing of absence of things online. But I'm like, you know, online is not real life. Like, you can still find these things. Like, you know, it's like, it's just all a matter of what you're wanting to pay, right? Like the 28 days, 28 weeks later thing of it all. Like, I have my copy of it. I got it back in when it was a double disc set. Like, I'm like, am I going to sell it? No, it's $500 on the off market, on the gray market. Yeah, but I like those movies. I've always liked those movies, and I kept those movies. And of course, there's always financial situations that you always kind of do. But like, I always tell people, and I think this is like a good point, is whatever your favorite movies are, whatever your top 100 movies, you should have them in physical media form. Because you never know when you're going to want to watch those favorite 100 movies. And they could just be comfort movies, right? They could be 100 Disney movies. But like you and I, we grew up in an era where if you didn't buy that VHS, eventually it was going to go into the vault. They actually told you it was going to go into the vault and it would go away and you wouldn't know when you were going to get it again. Now, of course, now we know it was like a 7-year cycle, right?
Yeah.
Like they got us to like, you know, wear out our VHS.
They kind of understood that. Like it was genius marketing, sneaky, but like also added to the... Like, I'm of two minds about it. It did add to the specialty of it, you know? And
it did.
I really kind of miss all of that, man.
Right? Like, do you remember, like this is going to fucking age me so much, but I mean, do you remember when Fantasia first came out on VHS and how you couldn't buy it in the regular set? You had to buy the deluxe $50 version back when $50 was like $150 now.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and I remember our family bought it like, and because it was an investment, because it was fucking Fantasia, because it had been 50 years since anybody had seen it and it got released. It bored me to tears when I was a kid.
Yeah.
It wasn't something that I
did not fucking understand. Like people, like it's one of those things where it's just like, everybody talked about it and Disney themselves like hyped it up so much, and like from a theatrical, like from a standpoint of like film appreciation, like I understand like this is a marvelous achievement in what you're trying to do. It's boring as fuck.
It really is. It really fucking is. Like I love what, like now as an adult, I love watching the first portion, especially during Christmas time, because it's very much so like a wintry kind of like the beginning of winter, right? Yeah. And it's got the great music. But ultimately, it is a, like you said, it's a snooze fest. It's wonderful. It's wonderfully produced, right? And I can appreciate it, but it's a snooze fest. It's so fucking boring because it's like, told in sections and watched in like 10-minute increments, like the sections, it's wonderful. But sitting there for 2 hours and 10 minutes, and then in for both versions, right? Like both versions are over 2 hours. It's kind of a trudge, right? It's kind of like this, okay, I got to run up that fucking hill, I guess. But like I said, like it's a wonderful like movie in sections, but back to the point, they tricked us into believing. I mean, it was an event. Like, I still remember seeing it in a, like, I think it was at the Man Chinese, because it was that special and it was packed and it took us 4 hours to see it because you had to stand in line and get your tickets. And then it wasn't like reserved seating like it was before or like it is now. It was an event. And when we finally saw it, I think I fucking fell asleep. But at the same time, like, they tricked us, right? They, in the best way possible, like, you know, but at the same time, it was a really, it was a big release. And like, I liked that ecosystem. I don't like this ecosystem because
I would rather be kind of tricked into that kind of thing than all the current trickery that we have.
So. Yeah, it's not even trickery. Like in the 80s and 90s, it was trickery. Now it's just fuckery. Now it's turned into fuckery because it's like, you know, I'm just waiting for the mass exodus of these digital copies, because you don't own the, like if you read the terms and conditions, This is the fucking fucked up part about this, is that you don't own your digital copy. You are leasing your digital copy. And they can take it away from you at any time. Yep. Like, it's just like the terms and conditions of Disney Plus and that fucking woman, that poor woman, who, because she died at Disneyland, and these motherfuckers, she signed a...
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yes. Like, that Disney would even try to present that case. Like, it's fucking mind-blowing. How somebody with some kind of sense... I understand the lawyerness of it all, and I don't put that past lawyers. Like, okay, like, yeah, your lawyers tried some bullshit. But how somebody in a higher up position was like, hey guys, we absolutely cannot do this. The amount of bad press we will get, like, it's not going to destroy us because we're Disney, but yeah, we really don't need to do this. Like, we paid $4 billion for a franchise that we don't know what to fucking do with. We can afford not to, like, counter sue or whatever, saying, oh, you clicked the Disney Plus fucking agreement, so therefore your problems are, like, your death is not our problem. Like, we cannot afford to do this.
Absolutely fucking not. Like, it's just wild to me. And it's like, so it's like going back to, like, the whole, like, physical media thing, it's like, yeah, you know what? You can't fucking fool me with the digital copy carrot dangling, motherfuckers. Like, I'm sorry, but I see those things and I just go, oh, okay, well, then the release is actually October 22nd. I can wait 2 weeks. I am not a little kid frothing at the mouth and shit anymore. I do have some self-control. Though, if you looked at my fucking library, like my media library, and the stacks upon stacks, you would think that I have no self-control.
I mean, it's not just DVDs for me anymore. Like, I do read a lot of comics digitally, but the things I know I want as part of my collection, like, I make it a point to buy them if I can, as a collector and as somebody, like, who appreciates, you know, just having that physical media. Yes, it's nice to tote around my Kindle with tons of digital copies of books loaded in there. But I also really enjoy the fact that, like, on my bookshelf, one of my bookshelves is, you know, complete copies of, not the individual saga issues, but, you know, the hardcovers, like, that I have a physical version of that story.
Absolutely.
And honestly, it never changed with, like, regular books. It never changed for me. Like, I tried to read books digitally, novels, etc., and I could never, it was never the same. Like, I got into comics because, like, it's such a vibrant media anyway, but like, that paper of a book is just, like, I gotta have that. Like, I cannot read a book digitally. I tried and tried and tried and tried. I can't do audiobooks either. Like, if it's something that's audio specific that feels more like a podcast, I can do that. But, like, listening to somebody read a book, my brain's just, like, not retaining any of it, man. That's the other thing I've been buying at McKay's. I've really ramped up my Stephen King collection in the last month.
Are you trying to get everything?
I mean,
some form or fashion.
Eventually, yeah, I would like to have a copy. I gotta have a first edition, but I would like to have,
of course,
like, decent copies of everything. About probably 3 or 4 weeks ago at McKay's, somebody brought in a massive collection of older hardcover versions, not first prints, but like I got the complete uncut Stand, like in hardcover. Yeah, which I was so excited. I paid $25 for it, but like I looked it up on eBay to see, but I was like, well, that's about the going rate. That's not terrible. It's not like I'm going to find a brand new. Yeah, the dust jacket is a little beat up, but it's not like torn. It's just, you know, well worn. So
yeah, with anything, like if it's a hardcover, it's at least 25 years old. At least.
Yeah, yeah. And I found a copy of Cycle of the Werewolf with with the art.
With art, like I was going to ask, is it one of the ones that actually has the Bernie Wrights and stuff?
Yep. Yep.
Oh, it's, man.
That's again, not a first print, but like a very good copy, like soft cover, like pages aren't falling out, like it's in really good condition. So I got I got different seasons, because hey, you know, like it's been a while. Like I never had Shawshank, like that book with the Shawshank body in hardcover. Never owned a hardcover. Yeah. And those are two of the, inarguably, two of the best Stephen King stories and two of the best adaptations of Stephen King stories.
Oh, absolutely.
So, yeah, I picked up a hard copy of that. The Dark Half, I picked up a good hard copy of that.
Ooh, that's a good one. That's a really good one, actually.
Thinner.
Man, you got some Thinner.
With the not Stephen King as Richard Bachman Thinner. Like OG before it was so not a first print, but probably like a second or third print copy of, like, it's even got the fake picture, Richard Bachman. I found that and I was like, oh my god.
That's great. Like, if you can find the OG Bachman novels and see the fake picture, like that's purely like of the era, you had to be there, Stephen King stuff. Like, I fucking love, I love all of that. I love the ephemera. I love having, like, I have all of my original printings of Gunslinger. Those are the only things that my original Stand, like uncut, and my first printing of, I know it sounds weird, but Insomnia, because it was signed by King. The thick ass, like get this, dude. This is a flashback, right? Walden Books exclusive, signed by, like, it was one of 1,000 that he signed. And my copy, I think, is 472 or 473. You don't ever forget these kinds of things, because it was my first like autographed copy of anything. And so, like, I didn't read it because I was, like, so concerned about it being, like, mint, right?
Yeah.
And then I eventually ended up getting another copy and reading it and not getting it. And then second time I read it, like, ended up being one of my more favorite underrated novels from...
A few months ago, it was, like, $8 for, like, a hardcover of Insomnia. And I picked it up.
Nice.
I haven't read it since it first came out, but I did read it when it came out and absolutely loved it. So eventually I'll get around to rereading it. Oh, the other one I found was a really old copy, probably second print of Dance Macabre.
His
nonfiction.
His first writing book. His first one on writing. I own a paperback version of that and on writing, just because they're good things to have.
I got to get on writing. Like I've never read it, and you know
good.
They talk about it so much on the King cast, and every time I'm like, I got to get that. Much like hunting down comics that I'm missing, it's the, like, coming across it, not necessarily the, like, I don't want to hunt it down online, you know? Some stuff, I'm just like, okay, fine, I'll just order it. Since we're talking about King, I just finished the second novel in the Bill Hodges trilogy.
Oh, okay.
And I know I talked about the show, Mr. Mercedes, when I watched it. And, you know, that show does not get enough credit for being really solid adaptation of, like, that character, that work. Reading those books, it makes me want to revisit the show because it was really, really good. The second book I wound up really enjoying more than I thought I would. Have you read any of them?
Yes, I read the first. Okay, so I know, yeah. I'm very well aware of that series. It's good. It's like really good, but for me, it was unexpected because
it's not like by the end of the second book and into the third, I just started the third book. The second one's Finders Keepers. The third one is End of Watch. It starts getting into like the typical, like Stephen King, like supernatural, spookier kind of like weird stuff. But you read Mr. Mercedes and then, Finders Keepers mostly does not have any of the supernatural tinged anything with it, even though like Holly, eventually becomes a character who has, like, you find out has like those extra sensory kind of things. Which that's what got me reading them because I have Holly. And I had seen The Outsider, but I haven't read the book. And I think I have a copy of The Outsider. Maybe I don't.
If It Bleeds is a great fucking... It's a very different book than it is a show. Because it leans way more into the supernatural because of Holly. That's where I found Holly. And I went back to Mr. Mercedes. And then... I didn't go back to anything else. I didn't go Finder Keepers or End of Watch, though I do love the character, Holly Gibbon. Like, I really do. Absolutely. Like, it's a, like, I've read, I've just read Mr. Mercedes and If It Bleeds. I have not read Holly yet. But I think it's also because I didn't buy it because I knew that I had a couple of other books. And King always references things in his books, like past cases and all that stuff. And I don't want something that could be integral for the other books to be ruined in a newer book. So I have them on the docket to get them and buy them and read them, but it's just one of those things, like, you know. Like, it's weird when you do something like this because there's now two Holly Gibbons in the cinematic universe, right?
Oh, yeah. Cynthia Erivo in The Outsider. And then, what's her name? Justine was, I can't remember, Lupe?
Justine Lupe, yeah.
Yeah. In the Mr. Mercedes show. Because I've seen both shows, both are very, very good as the character. But they're extremely different versions. Like Cynthia Erivo's Holly Gibney in The Outsider is very nervous character, but she's more competent. And it kind of makes sense. Two different ethnicities, I know. But like from just what I've been reading, by the time that character's in The Outsider, she is going to be a more competent character. In the Hodges books, she is a very she's riddled with all these anxieties and nervous disorders and like that really, really hold her back. I said, that's part of the reason I started. I was like, I'm going to go back to Mr. Mercedes, start there, meet Holly and then follow her journey. I still have to get If It Bleeds and The Outsider. By the time I finish him to watch, I'll have both of those. I'm really excited to get to Holly. I'm really enjoying that character. And honestly, for a guy who spent a lot of time, like, only vaguely crossing over with characters, to have him really, really, like, substantially staying with certain characters, like, it's kind of nice. You know, I know he did it with the Dark Tower books, but, like, those are also, they're just different, you know? So, like, the follow-through, it's been really, really enjoyable. They're surprisingly good, just, like, crime novels. And
he's good at crime. Like, yeah. make no doubt about it. Like
for a dude who literally made his name being like, oh, the horror writer. I'm like, I don't know. I know there are crime novels everywhere, man, but I think you might have missed your calling, because all the more crime-centric stuff that I've read of his, including those hard case books, like,
yeah, I was gonna ask,
some of the most
the Colorado Kid.
Yeah, I read all three of those. It was okay. They were one of them was specifically hard to track down. It might have been the Colorado Kid, but I did read all three of those.
Yeah. Colorado Kid, Joyland, and I cannot remember the last one.
It's the kid that sees dead people.
Yeah.
That one I really loved. It had the more supernatural tinge to it, but
yeah, but it was still crime.
Yeah. I mean, Joyland has a supernatural tinge, but it is very crime focused. You missed your calling, man. Like, I want to read more of this stuff. It's so compelling. And
but, I mean, like, let's be honest, like, we should have seen it a long time ago with Rita Hayworth and The Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah.
Like, that's is literally crime / Count of Monte Cristo retelling. Like, and it's
absolutely
perfect.
Absolutely. Anyway, like, all over the place. All right, so I'm trying to think if I had time to watch anything we haven't talked about. Like, did you watch the third episode of Agatha All Along yet?
Oh yeah, I watched what I affectionately called, like, I looked at my wife, I was like, what is this Nancy Myers fucking craziness that we're fucking going through? I definitely watched it. It was great. Like, I'm hearing, like, social media is, like, so fucking weird, and I'd really like to hear it from, like, a true blue source, and not just, like, you know, southerncomicbooksunlimited.com, like, that comes up on my feed, like, you know, like, suggestions. I don't want fucking suggestions, motherfuckers. Stop doing this, saying that it's the lowest rated TV show. I'd actually, or, like, Marvel TV show, I'd actually like to hear it from, like Variety or whatever, not just a fucking bunch of fucking pig-headed fucking men who don't like the LGBTQ movie.
So I know you're not supposed to read the comments, but I've come across a few of those articles in my feed.
And yeah,
reading the comments, like, it's so funny because, like, yeah, it'll get review bombed by fucking trolls. And yeah, like, these people writing these articles do seem to want to jump on the bandwagon of, like, yeah, this it's nothing. It's more crap from Marvel. But then, like, I literally spent 20 or 30 minutes the other day just reading through comments, because it was making me so happy, of not a specific subset of people. It was, like, men, women, younger, older, gay, straight, whatever, of people chiming in of, like, you've lost your fucking mind. I watched the first two episodes. The show was incredibly fun. I can't wait to see more. And it made me so happy. It was just hundreds of comments of people saying that. And so, like, I'm with you. Where's the actual truth at? Because if people are bothering to leave comments on these articles saying, you're an idiot, I really enjoyed this, and it's hundreds of people, then There's no way it's bad. Like, I get that maybe it's not your thing, much like Deadpool Wolverine. Like, I get the people who are like, yeah, this, like, you know, I do get people saying they, like, it's nothing. It's like, it's a waste of time. I do get it. But, like, also, like, it's just supposed to be fun. Calm the fuck down. It is not high art. It was never pretending to be high art. It's just fun.
You're 100% right. And, like, it's wild to think that people are that frail egoed and that get that quickly triggered. That, but then again, I mean, you know, we're like, you know, like I say this like affectionately, but I mean, you know, what, like the frailest of egos is the white male ego. Like, it's the frailest, like, you know, because they just can't fucking take anything. They can't take anything that isn't like white male and heterosexual, because that's the way it's been for hundreds of years. But like, what I'm going back to the show, what I'm finding so delightful is their recontextualing of visual styles and allowing you to kind of do the guesswork of like what trope they're in, but also using it very effectively and taking us through this, like, this journey, like, you know, the on the witch's road, and giving characters time to shine, which, like, I kind of fucking loved. Like, I love this journey that we're on with these, like, these women and this one kid, as we go through the tests and trials. And like, now that it's very clever in the way that it's going to do what WandaVision did, which is take the framework of a show, a visual style of a show or a trope. Like, it's the romantic comedy of like the Nancy Meyers, right? Like,
yeah.
Location, location, location. Like, Nancy Meyers' movies are always about like these beautiful locations, right? And these like women that are in like, you know, these like beige clothes, and it's like all you have to do is watch The Holiday or watch Something's Got to Give, and you know exactly where you're, like, the kind of comfort food movie. Comfort food thing that you're in. And I like that it's leaning, instead of motherhood, it's leaning into like whatever this is for Agatha, right? Because she isn't a mother, even though the mother thing keeps on coming up because it's a part of the story, and her story and stuff. But
I do wish that they had played that a little closer to the vest. But yes. I also get why you don't, because after two episodes, it was like, oh, this is one of Wanda's kids. And mm-hmm. I mean, maybe there is another like heartbreaking reveal later on. I wouldn't doubt it that like, hey, this, I mean, spoilers. Hey, this is not her son.
Yes.
And because like, that's going to add to that journey of her like coming back around and maybe like a salvation of sorts of her character. And then finding out that this wasn't the kid that she gave up or, you know, sacrificed, whatever. But like, I get why you kind of like start down that road now to avoid like the Mephisto thing, where it's just like Mephisto, like, you know, but you do kind of want that like speculation and like people getting more involved, but you also don't want to like completely fucking disappoint them. I mean, like, guys, Wanda is not going to be in this show.
Yeah, absolutely. To which I'm not even going to fucking like tease yes, maybe no. I'm just going to say, I don't think that she is. Like, she's not. Like, if she is, then that's a fucking wild-ass secret that they kept for a fucking long time. Yeah. Because this show has been completed for a while now. So it would have gotten out. Like, every bad secret gets out from Marvel. Like, even if we don't want to believe it, it's a part of the white noise of Marvel's shows. But
yeah.
I truly do find this show fascinating. Like, I really do enjoy it. Like, I I don't know how you can't. But
I don't know. I don't know what people want, because it's not like, I get the backlash for the Acolyte to a degree, because like, it was trying new things but not fully executing them. This show, if it's not your cup of tea, fine, just don't watch it. If yeah, like the weird genre blending, like whatever, isn't your cup of tea, that's fine. I get that. But like, once the show shows you what it is, it's all about executing its own ideas. And mm-hmm, is it succeeding at what it's trying to do? And I think the show is doing that. If it's not your cup of tea, completely fine, I understand that. But this feels like the show they were trying to make. Much like She-Hulk. Like,
yeah,
the biggest problems with She-Hulk were the CGI, which was completely rushed and a little botched. But like, the show itself, I think, executes on the ideas it's trying to do.
Oh, and absolutely. Absolutely.
So I don't understand calling it a failure. Like,
well, like, know. I have no, absolutely. Like, I don't get that. But, you know, again, like, I'm in the bag for them trying new things, because it's so fun to watch, like, them figure out how they can contextually do things, right? Like, how can they reapproach a genre and yeah, make it fit within the confines of a Marvel, like, rather than like, rather
doing
than
it with a character nobody Marvel cares about helps.
Like, exactly. And if anybody says that they care about Agatha Harkness, they're fucking lying. I'm yeah, sorry, but they're fucking lying, because ain't nobody knew about Agatha Harkness until the fucking show. Like, even Marvel heads, I will say, did not care about her.
Not, yeah, you know. I think that's, you know, maybe why I had such fun with the badness that was Madam Web, because it's like, no, nobody gives a shit about this character. Like, it's a shame that they involved the Parkers in it so much. Like, that whole thing is kind of like so bizarre. But yeah, like, I never gave a shit about that character, and like, her larger place in like the spider mythos, don't care. Like, it's just dumb. And it's fun in a way that most people don't agree with, but like, it was fun for me in that way. This, I think, is just fun, well executed fun, and there's enough mystery there that like, I'm constantly intrigued. I wish they had gotten more in this third episode. Like, I get the whole confines of the house and why they're doing it like that, and it's just like, I was a little bit let down with only being in the house for the episode.
I think it was their bottle episode, to be honest.
Yeah,
it felt like their bottle episode, and I'd rather have a bottle episode early
than later.
And if you guys don't know what a bottle episode is, just look it up. It's always when a production doesn't ever have enough money to do everything that they want to do. And so there's an episode called the bottle episode. They used to have them all the time. And they're basically like set to one location, and they recycle things. At least in the old time. Now they just set them in one location, and they're very low budget. You can tell that they're low budget. And this was a very interesting solution for that, because they made the stakes very high on this one. But it's still a bottle episode nonetheless, and you can very much so tell the budget constraints of this particular episode. Now, my hope is that it's just early on, and it's not going to be a bunch
every
of
episode is a yeah, bottle episode. Yeah,
is a second, like, because yeah, they had to, because they didn't want to spend the money that, like, you know, because they spent all their fucking money on Secret Wars. Fuck you, Secret Wars. It wasn't even a secret, and it wasn't even wars. Just call it what it was. The payout shelter for Sam Jackson. But yeah, like, it's it's a lot of fun. I'm having a lot of fun with it. These three episodes, like, I'm glad that they're finding a different way to approach and a different kind of style that they're approaching, but they're still within the confines of WandaVision. It makes me more excited for Vision, because I feel like now that you've done this for the two characters, you have to do this with Vision.
I don't want it to be fucking 2 years before we see that show, though. Like,
I know.
I get the slowing down of things, but at the same time, it's just like, hearing about this, like, we heard about Ironheart and Eyes of Wakanda.
Oh, my God.
Fucking 5 years ago, man.
Pre-pandemic. Like, right now, Riri Williams is now 28 years old. Like, literally, if we went by the timeline, she can't play 16 anymore, can she? I mean, the actress herself is, like, fucking... The actress herself is already in her mid-20s now. Because fucking Wakanda Forever took, like, it was released in, what, 2021? Yeah. Like, at the end of 2021? Like, I don't know, man. It's fucking wild, right?
Yeah. I mean, they're ramping up that show. Like, I'm seeing mm-hmm. them talk about it and, like, tease what it's going to be about. So, you know, we'll see. I still really enjoying Agatha. We hadn't gotten the second episode of Penguin yet. That's this weekend.
That's this weekend. Yeah, they went to the 29th, which or they went to Sundays, which is the HBO model, which extends it out. It was like weird. It was like 10 days between when it premiered and now the next episode, which is this weekend, which, yeah, I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, I wonder if that was like, oh, we're going to drop it on Max. We're going to, like, premiere it on HBO Sunday night. Give us, like, maybe people will, like, start talking about it, and it will give us more, you know, press for having it on Sunday night rather than just randomly, like, dropping it. Like, I don't know. I didn't really understand why they did that, so...
I almost wonder if it was for the fans, like the younger fans,
yeah,
the younger core group, because they don't watch linear TV. I mean, we know that, right? And so, like, it's a nice way to give them something and then give the older people, I'm sorry, them, but like the more seasoned viewers that are linear TV, a chance to watch linear TV, right? Like, watch it on Sunday. And then you get both audiences. You get the young audience who's hyped for it. Like, oh, shit, I get to see it on Thursday or I can watch it on Friday. Fuck yeah, I'm going to watch it. They watch it. They start talking about it. But then the other audience, like I said, linear TV audience, they get to watch it on Sunday. Now, I don't know why they didn't continue this trend, because it would actually be kind of effective, at least to me, releasing it earlier on Max and then letting the other people watch it on linear TV, right? So you're getting double doses. But, you know, there is that. I was going to ask you something about, because we're talking Max and we're talking HBO shows, did you see the trailer that just dropped for The Last of Us Season 2?
No, I haven't got a chance to watch the trailer yet. Although I did see the trailer, but immediately saw the discourse of people... like, show fans being like, oh, this looks incredible, I can't wait. And game fans being like, fuck you.
That's funny. That
is funny. But they did head this off like 2 months ago. The showrunner was given an interview and he was like, we have changed some stuff from the second game. There will be changes. So, like, I don't know what the changes are because I didn't play the games. But, like, you know, I feel like it's like the Harry Potter thing all over again. The book people being like, oh, fuck you. And I'm just like, I'm enjoying this. Like, you can have your books. That's great. It doesn't, like, you know, I don't.
It maybe doesn't matter.
Let go you of that a little bit.
You have like, the games. Yeah. Like, so, like, to me, it's like this. Both can exist in the universe and be different. And to be quite honest, there's some stuff that probably should be changed because it won't work cinematically. Even though you're playing a game and you're doing stuff, a game is very, very, very fucking different than a movie or a TV show, And it's the reason why 9 times out of 10, like with the exception of this last 2 years, most of the time, adaptations for video games do not work as a translated narrative. Because if you're following a strict adherence to the narrative, gaming shit does not make sense in the realm of narrative filmmaking. Because there's so many goddamn side quests, there's so much stupid shit that you have to do. It doesn't make sense. Like, yeah, you can have, like, you know, you can have, like, you know, like your occasional, like, side quest thing in a narrative, but if it's all side quests, which a lot of games are, it won't work. Like, I just, like, I don't get the complaint. I really honestly don't, because how do you fucking complain after having a masterful season like the first season?
Yeah.
Like, how do you complain?
Yeah, I'm with you. Like, I, again, didn't play the game, but I do understand there were changes, but also, like, they executed. Like, the show is so good. Like, I understand if you're like, well, it's not the exact same story. But if you look at it for the story that it is, it's so well done and so masterfully executed. Like, just, can you enjoy that? Like, I don't, you know... I'm a huge Marvel Comics guy. A lot of the stories they've told are not necessarily true to the source material. Like, but, I mean, the Civil War, Captain America Civil War, is not what the Marvel Civil War comics were.
Oh, like, it's so not, yeah.
But that doesn't take away from, like, how fucking fantastic that movie is. So... Oh. You know, you gotta be willing to, like, embrace it for what it is, as long as it's well told. And, like, I have no doubt that season 2 is gonna be fucking phenomenal. I mean, we've waited long enough for sure. So,
which, like, okay, can I just say, it absolutely doesn't and does feel like we've waited a long time. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, I know it's been 18 months, and it's going to be about 2 years once we get it, or close to 2 years. But it doesn't feel like that. Like, it's so weird to watch and go, oh, yeah, it's been that fucking long. It's been a while. But yeah, like, I'm so in the bag for this.
Since we're talking about Max, you sent me, like, like, I can't believe this is still going to be a thing. Earlier this week. So, yes. So A, it's not season 3 of Velma. Like, I don't know if that trailer or whatever the fuck it is makes it clear. It's literally just a Halloween special.
Special. Yes.
Yeah.
but all the same, a fucking Halloween special. How is that happening?
It had to have already been in the bag.
Yes. And, but, like, if you're going to take a loss on something, and then this is where...
They should have taken a loss on that show after season 1. I don't care if it was already, like, finished. Like, can you not write that off on your taxes? I would rather see a fucking shitty Batgirl movie than more of this bullshit. Because, like, while season 2 was better than season 1... It's still not good. Not fucking good at all. But an animated show that was, like, you enjoyed and I enjoyed. You got to see it before I did. I guess there is a season 2 of Gremlins?
Yes, there is, and it's coming soon. And guess who's starring in it?
I haven't seen the trailer, so I read anything about it, so I don't know.
They somehow got Simu Liu to voice the main character.
Oh, fuck,
It's taking place in the, like, it jumps time, and it's a little bit more of an adventure story, set in pre-war, I think, U.S. And it's like the Gremlins come to the U.S. because, like, that's how it ends, right? Like, them going to San Francisco. But it takes place a few years after, and it has Simu Liu, which I'm genuinely surprised, but I guess he's a fan of the original, and they showed him the thing in between Dante and the guys that are running it. They convinced him to join up, which I find is the coolest thing in the fucking world. Like, now, why am I not getting a Simu Liu action film set in pre-war San Francisco, or like the 1800s San Francisco live action version of the Gremlins? I don't know. Well, we do know it's because of the budget. But I'll take this. Like, yeah. I loved the show. I adored the show, actually. So, like, you know, yeah, and it's coming soon. I think it's
like
the
next
first
week
of October. Yeah, first week of October.
So, yeah, I just happened across that when I was looking at, like, this app I use for, like, to keep track of all the shit I watch and when it premieres. And it was like, Gremlins, Secrets of the Mogwai, season two. And I was like, oh, wait, there's a season two? Like, I know we had talked about it. Like, we hope there's a season two. I was like, and I kind of just put it in the back of my mind and was like, well, hopefully. But yeah, that, like, that's freaking exciting. So, definitely something to look forward to there.
No, absolutely.
I think I've talked about this show, but it's been a few years since the last season. The season premiere of a show called From, which is on MGM Plus, which nobody fucking has. It premiered this week. I meant to bring it up when we were talking about Stephen King, because Stephen King has been adamant about, like, people need to watch this show. This is the third season. It's really good. It's got Harold Perrineau in it. Like,
yes,
it's supernatural tinged. Like, if you're into shit like that, like, it is absolutely worthwhile. Season three opens, like, with just, it's fucking brutal. It's just brutal.
I will, like, that's actually on my list from the last time we talked about it, which was season one and season two. So I definitely have to do a catch up. Did you, like, I did want to talk a couple of trailers also, because there were some things that have come out. We'll get to the second one later, but the first one I really want to talk to you about, which, because I'm super excited about it, is I didn't know that the film had been produced, shot, produced, and already getting ready for release. Ryan Coogler and Michael B. Jordan have a movie.
I haven't watched the trailer. I didn't watch the trailer. Dude. But I do. I did read some on the film, and, like, I want to see it. Like, if those guys are involved, I want to see it.
Like, it looks fucking fantastic. Like, shot on 70mm, like, Depression era vampire, like, or post-war vampire movie set in the South. Like, with, like, the final shot of the trailer is Michael B. Jordan shooting a Tommy gun into the screen in slow motion. It is fucking, like, it's just got this vibe where it's like, we're R-rated, we're gonna fucking, it's gonna get bad, but you're gonna want to see this because Coogler is, like, it looks like this is something that Coogler has been wanting to tell for a while. It just looks fucking fantastic, dude. I am super fucking stoked for this movie, and I cannot wait to see more and it reveal more, because it's a vampire movie that we're aware of, and we kind of see what the setting is, but that's it. That's all we know. The trailer is doing exactly what I love a trailer does, which is gives you no contextual information, but all the visual splendor of what you're in store for. And I'm there for it. Like, it looks fucking fantastic. It looks scary.
It's got a good cast.
Yeah. Like, he got the cast that he wanted. He got the budget he wanted. And more importantly, he got Final Cut. And he's working with, like, he's working with his dude. Like, you know, like, and it's not a, like, and I say this with so much fucking respect, but it's not a Black Panther movie. And I feel like that's actually what he needed. Like, before, like, I feel like this is the movie he should have done before he had done Black Panther, because Black Panther is all about missing the greatness of Chad. And I'm there with him. Like, I could not imagine, like, what it was to have to do that. But yeah, it looks really good. I am transitioning. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, it, like, seeing Jack O'Connell, like, in something, like, with, like, true creatives and maybe, like, not... I mean, because I think the last actual big budget thing he was in was that 300 prequel.
Yes.
And, of course, I mean, that's just a money grab. And, like, I get why you do it, but, like, it also puts a little, like, people are like, you know, kind of, like, Sam Worthington kind of fell into the same trap. And it's not that, like, he's a bad actor. He's just, like, he's not, he doesn't have a lot of range, but, like, he's good at what he does. So, yeah. Like, I'm definitely interested to see, like, and, I mean, it's always nice to see Hailee Steinfeld, so.
Yeah, and especially, like, so it looks like she all kinds of evil in this movie, so that should be a nice change up from the Marvel universe for her. And speaking of Marvel, we finally got the trailer. Like, it's, I mean, the same trailer.
I saw this trailer a few months ago.
Yes. It's cut a little bit differently.
Yeah.
It's a little bit quicker, which is okay. Still use the, like, I love, like, I'm going to be honest with you, I love that they're using the Pixies to promote this.
Yeah.
Like, it just feels right. I mean, you know, if you didn't see it before, like, the only thing that, like, I didn't really catch, which I like, it made me laugh even more now, is Sentry, a.k.a. Bob. Like, I didn't get the fucking joke of having Lewis Pullman, who played Bob in fucking Maverick, playing another character named Bob in fucking the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Like, yeah. That, I found that truly fucking hilarious. And I do love Lewis Pullman. Like, you know, basically a spitting image of his dad. And just as weird and kooky, except for we didn't find out that Bill Pullman was weird and kooky until really after, like, you know, after Independence Day.
And not knocking Lewis Pullman. I actually am glad that things worked out like they did, but, like,
yes,
is necessarily a name. What's his name that had to drop out from The Walking Dead?
Oh, shit.
It's Glenn. Steven. Yeah. He's the voice of Invincible, and he's got that Netflix show. And so, like, he's definitely built an audience for himself.
Yes.
How you go from him, and he has to drop out because filming got pushed, not for any other real differences. And then you're like, well, this guy's our second choice. I appreciate that your second choice is not a guy who's going to distract from the story itself, which I feel like he would have, because it's such a, not, again, I know he's not Tom Cruise, but, like, he does have that, like, kind of starish thing where it's like, oh, that's the guy from this, that's the guy from that. And Sentry, Bob, whatever, I feel like needed to be a lower, like, not.
Yes.
You know, drawing attention to itself kind of thing.
Absolutely. Especially for the reveal. Even though
we all know.
Reveal. Yeah. Well, like, we comic book fans know who Sentry is, right? Like, but, like, for average audiences, this is, like, except for it's kind of really hinted at. Like, it's very much so hinted at, right? But I feel like it's the right choice to go with Lewis Pullman rather than Steve Yeun, even though I love Steve Yeun. Because Steve Yeun, it's like, it's embedded in there, like you said. It's the whole Invincible thing. It's the whole, like, he is a star of some stature, where Lewis Pullman, it's like, oh, the dude from the, oh wait, isn't he play Bob in Maverick too? But didn't he wear sunglasses? What's the dork doing? Like, not adhering to just the kind of badassery that's going to happen, because you know that it's gonna, there's gonna be badassery, because if you know the character. I like the thing that I love about it is that, like, it's like Marvel just patiently waiting to do their own Suicide Squad and just watching the shit just blow up, like, and just going, oh, we're gonna keep it low key. And it's kind of very much so low key. Like, the trailer is, is like, for me at least, the trailer is very low key. It focuses on the humor and not the, and not like whatever the story is. Like, it's kind of like a story, but we don't know the full thing yet. And of course, like, the best part about it is that they put the best person, they put the person that we want to be front and center, which is Yelena, aka Florence Pugh. Yeah. Because I mean, that's who I want. Like, I, that's
her,
like,
her, that was her, like, and Sebastian Stan for sure. Yeah. And it's kind of fun that Marvel's leaning into the, like, hey, we're hiring nepo babies, like, and like, this is kind of a story about nepo babies, like,
yeah,
because you definitely have two, at least two of the stars of the movie are, you know, what people would point to as nepo babies.
Oh, big time, big time. But my favorite part about this, like, this trailer is that it's like, It like, it's so not about, like, it goes, it's almost like it's going back to basics, to where it was like, we're not going to reveal the story, though we're going to show you things.
I have no idea what the story is. Like, I thought, like, is Bucky in on this? But then, like, part of the trailer, he's, like, chasing them down, because you have a U.S. agent being like, is that Bucky? Like, you know, and last time those two characters were occupying the same space, they were not friendly at all. So, like, it's, I don't, it looks fucking fun, man. Like, it just looks fun. Really, and like, I, you know, I'm definitely full on, like, beating the, like, Marvel's back, man. Like, y'all, anybody who's not enjoying Agatha, like, fucking fine, but like, it's fun. And like, they're on a streak with me, at least.
Yep.
Like, I am a Marvel guy, but like, I have not made any bones about, like, the up and down of, like, the last several years, you know? So yeah, like, I feel like this is going to be another, like, home run, whether it lights up the box office or not, whatever. But I feel like it's definitely going to be a home run. Like, it just looks so much fun.
Well, and so the best part about the trailer is that it leaves whole, like, people that we know that are in this movie out, like, completely out of the trailer. Because, and here's the thing, like, this is my big question before I talk about that. What the fuck is the asterisk?
I don't know. They say it's good. They, like, it was apparently a last minute thing. Like, I don't know if it was Feige's suggestion or somebody said, like, something to Feige, and he was like, oh, that's great, we got to put that in. But like, they've yet to reveal, like, Feige says it's going to be, like, in the movie, you're going to get it, it's great, it's fantastic. We'll see. Like, you know, that it's a little mystery, but, like, you know, it'll be fun. So
no, absolutely. And the other thing, like, the very obvious thing that they're not showing, and I think that they won't show until after New World Order, is why it's called Thunderbolts. Like, because we know he's in it. We've heard that he's in it. I think I've even seen a couple of cast photos of you know, Thunderbolt. You know, I don't want to ruin it, because it's a little, like, I mean, you know, I know that it's, you know, we ruin everything, but this one, it's like, if you don't know it, then you don't know it. But at the same time, I'm like, you don't put him in the trailer. That's kind of funny. And you make it seem like Valentina is the operator or the main person of this thing, which makes me think, what happens in New World Order? Like, you know, wait to get us to this point to where this team is formed. But then there's also other people that we know are in there. that were from past Marvel movies. Like, I'm very curious why they didn't show, what's her name? Rachel Weisz.
Oh, yeah.
Because like, I know that she's in the movie. But it's going to be fun. Like, the thing that I love is, like, it's this attitude that they've, like, they've kind of appropriated from Guardians. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like this, it's kind of like this smart-assy kind of thing, which I hope it really ends up turning out to be. But even the poster is very kind of, it has an attitude towards it, right? Like, I love the poster because it's like everybody squished into like a phone booth thing. And it kind of like gives that dirt, like that true Dirty Dozen attitude. Like, I don't want to fucking work with you, even though I am proficient and you are proficient and we do good things. I don't want to work with you. And I mean, you know, who doesn't like that? I mean, fucking Midnight Run. Like, I mean, like Midnight Run is one of my favorite fucking movies because it's all about two dudes that do not get along, but absolutely end up getting along at the end. Like, that's like kind of like one of my favorite tropes in movies. It's actually something that a movie that I just saw that's being released today used very well, even though everybody's like review bombing it. I don't know why, but yeah, like Thunderbolts, very, very excited for it. And I'm glad that everybody can see the trailer now legally.
Yeah, yeah, me too. It's a great freaking trailer, man. So, we talked for 2 hours. We never talked about football. It's great. You're rescued from football talk. Although, in a weird turn, just a little bit weird turn of events.
Let's fuck it. Let's talk it. Like, I don't care.
I started this season, like pre game one, like really, really hopeful for the Falcons, and they are now 1-2. It's not over, and they do look like a team that can win. They just have caught some bad breaks and not followed through on some things. After week one, like your season looked like it was done. Adam's a Green Bay Packers fan, and like I even after game one, after they lost, I was like, yeah, but there, like, there's something there. They like, and then by week two, I was like, oh, the Falcons can do it. They're still uneven, and but now here we sit with the Packers, like you thought it was done, and they're not fucking done. They're there, man. They are like top of the NFC. Like
they are like, so Malik Willis has proven to be a beast of a quarterback that nobody thought was going to be like that. Like, I don't know what they thought, but Jesus Christ, like, okay. So like, just as a weird side note, when they played the Titans, who have gone 0-3 now, like they're just literally like, that's another narrative that we have to talk about, the wild ass standings at after game three in both AFC and NFC. But Malik Willis went 13 for 19, 200 yards, a touchdown, and then went six runnings, 73 yards, and a rushing touchdown. Like, that is like, I don't like mentioning him, but since he's already back in the ether and they seem to have forgiven this fucking dog killing motherfucker, I have to say that before everything, he literally reminds me of Dirty Bird's version of Michael Vick. Like, literally watching the highlights, it's like, oh shit, he's as big as Vick, he runs like Vick, and he throws like Vick. And again, I say that with an asterisk of, fuck that dog killing motherfucker. Like, seriously. Like, I don't care. As soon as you kill dogs, you are persona non grata to me. You are seriously persona non grata. I don't care if the NFL wants to rehab you and you're going to do a special on a documentary that you're hosting about quarterbacks. No, 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 no. But that being said, like, Willis, Jesus. Like, it was the same feeling I had when another piece of shit, Favre, left got injured, and then Aaron Rodgers took over, and it was like, what?
Yeah.
Almost a what? Like, why? How did they? Like, we just, like, I am not going to say anything more than we are extremely lucky when it comes to our quarterbacks.
Yeah, that meme I sent you cracked me up. The Packers cultivated a winning quarterback in 2 weeks. The Bears haven't done it in a fucking century.
Yeah. Well, like, so, okay, so let's talk about, like, these division. Okay, so, like, yeah, you're 1-2, but, like, to be perfectly honest, like, the games
that division still are open. Yeah. They should have beat the. How the fucking Steelers are 3-0? Like, I do understand it.
Okay, so, like, also, how are the Commanders 2-1? How? How are the Commanders?
Yeah.
The Bills 3-0?
Yeah.
Like,
The Bills are always, like, on the verge. Like, they've had solid teams in the last few years. The Bills will inevitably probably fall apart come playoffs, because that's what they do. They're the Dallas Cowboys of the AFC.
Yes, they are. Except for without any football, without any Super Bowl wins. Yeah, I mean, let's be honest.
At least the Cowboys used to win Super Bowls.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Jerry made a deal with the devil, and now the devil has come to pay for the last 25 years since Troy Aikman, right? But it's weird to me to watch the Bills go 3-0. It's like, what? Or the Steelers for that matter.
The Jets are 2-1. I mean, I know it's Aaron Rodgers, but like, I wouldn't have picked them at 2-1.
No, my favorite thing is like, I always feel like I always forget. Okay. So like Bills and Giants, like I always keep on forgetting. Like, their quarterbacks, like, I always forget who is who, right? And so, like, when I'm watching the, like, when I see the Bills, I'm like, how the hell are they 3-0? They have Daniel Jones. Oh, no, they don't. They have the other guy, the Razor guy. I don't even. Then I'm like, oh, my God, they're both in Razor commercials. What the fuck? Yeah. Josh Allen. It's just, like, it's so weird for me to, like, watch these two New York-based teams. And one of them, like, everybody's a fan of it's like everybody's a Giants fan, and I don't get it. Like everybody loves them, even though they're terrible. But nobody's a like I mean, there's Bills Mafia, of course, and we can talk about, like, I love the Bills Mafia just because they're just wild. They're just out in the northeast of New York, just being Bills Mafia, right? Drinking out of bowling balls, doing shooters out of bowling balls.
It's hard. Like I know people that hate the Bills. It's just hard for me to hate the Bills, man. Like they just like the Dolphins. Like it's hard for me to hate the Dolphins because like they always just seem like not hapless. Just like, oh, we're in it. Oh fuck, we're not in it.
Like they always feel like they have eternally bad luck. Like you don't have to worry about them because bad luck will eventually get them.
I mean, I feel similarly about the Browns.
Gosh, but the Browns earn it. Like,
yeah, they do.
Like seriously, why? Okay, like here's my thing. Baker was fine. He was starting to develop. You knew what was going to happen. As soon as you traded him and you took the rapist on or the sexual assaulter.
Well, the Browns this year, I'm definitely like, I like, fuck them. So
yeah,
like previous to this year, it was just kind of hard to like, it's like, maybe like good luck to them. So maybe to me, the most surprising thing about the current NFL season is the Bengals haven't won a fucking game.
Oh man, Fool Joe is just like he can't, like they're like the Bears. They just can't get it together.
I get why the Jaguars are 0-3.
Yes.
I get why the Titans are 0-3. I don't understand why the Bengals are 0-3.
Like literally, like I don't like, I'm watching it going, guys should have won at least one of your games.
Yeah.
Like, one of them. Like, so now, like, my favorite part is that they're playing the Panthers. So which one of these, which one of these fucking loser ass teams?
Panthers who are 1-2. Like, yeah. Again, that's not great, and they do suck. But yeah, the Panthers have won a game, and the Bengals have not. I mean, it's fucking, it's wild. And they're playing them with Andy Dalton at quarterback.
See, okay, like, that is the funniest fucking thing in the world, is that, like, my favorite thing is the rise of the mediocre quarterback having to take over. Like, that's another narrative this year that is so wild. The mediocre quarterback having to take over, and whether or not they are good or not good. And that leads into your game this week, which Derek Carr is not the second coming. I don't know why Saints fans think this, because he's gonna get run over by your defense. I know that you don't have faith in your I know that you don't have faith in your team, and especially when it comes to the Aints.
It's just hard to have faith in them. It really is. But like in the NFC South, very, very interesting week. The Falcons are playing the Saints. So if the Falcons win, they'll be 2-2. The Saints will be 2-2. The Bucs are playing the Eagles. The Eagles, I do believe, have a better team.
Yep.
If the Eagles beat the Bucs, then, I mean, we got a three-way tie at 2-2. If the Bucs do beat the Eagles, I mean, going 3-1, like, putting them back on top, fucking Baker Mayfield, man. Like, God, I
know you hate him,
man.
Like, I hated him for a long time until he got squashed. It's like him and Mishu are like the two, like, wild ass. Like, Mishu, I love just because he's a dirtbag. He doesn't care. He's got that mullet. He's like. He is the most Raiders quarterback that ever did Raiders, right?
I forgot that he was the quarterback for the fucking Raiders. Like, I was talking about with a guy at work this week, and I was like, yeah, what the fuck happened to that guy? He's like, he's the Raiders quarterback. I was like, are you serious?
Yeah. But he's the ultimate Raiders quarterback. And the thing was that, like, here's the thing. Like, Andy Dalton had like an all-timer game during that game. Like, he went 26 and 37. Like, that's an 80% completion rate. Yeah. He did 320 yards, and I think he did 3 or 4 touchdowns. I cannot remember for the life of me. But that fool went off, right? But here's the thing, is that they only went off in the first two quarters. And then in the third quarter or the fourth quarter, like, the Raiders tried to come a comeback, and they almost did it.
Yeah.
They had like, what, I think that they had two touchdowns and an extra point. And I mean, like, I'm not saying that the Raiders are good, but I am saying that Gardner Minshew is like, he was a joke, but then he wasn't a joke at a certain point. Now he's like actually a starting quarterback, right? He like, these are all the sons of Fitzmagic, but nobody is Fitzmagic. Like nobody is like, I don't know how it's possible that Fitzmagic was Fitzmagic during the time that he was, but like, all of these guys are the sons of, like, I like Gardner Minshew, Baker Mayfield, all these dirt bud quarterbacks, like these dudes that just, like, even Kirk Cousins changed his personality to basically be Fitzmagic 2.0, right? Like, yeah. That whole unassuming white boy quarterback that kind of has a style, but it's only acceptable in Florida or Vegas. But yeah, dude, like the Panthers should be 0-3. Like, let's be honest, because if they had not,
the Chiefs should be like 1-2 at best.
Well, you know, they have their extra special team, the refs.
Yeah, the fucking referees, man. Like,
and this is coming from a dude that
and I don't hate the Chiefs,
loves the Chiefs,
but like it's fucking ridiculous. Like it's
there
was a stat somebody posted this week about the number of interceptions that were that have been overturned for Mahomes versus Brady's entire career, and it's alarming. I realized that Brady was playing in an age like he wasn't like the end of back into his career was more in the like roughing the passer and you know like just all of that shit, like there were more protection towards the back end of his career. And Mahomes, it's at the front end of his career, so he's getting more of those calls. I understand that, but the amount of interceptions he gets called back for, either somebody hitting him or pass interference, like it's insane. But then like those calls don't then go the opposite way when it's happening to them. Like, yes, they are not getting called for pass interference.
No, they're not, because that final, like, I'm not.
This is at least the second time this season that they've done something like that, and it's been called for them, but not against them.
Well, the fourth quarter, the fourth quarter PI should have absolutely been called, like, no doubt about it. And I'm not saying that the Falcons would have won. But I'm also saying that it would have been.
You give him the ball on the fucking 1 yard line. Like, yeah, maybe they again don't score. Maybe there's a stand, but like not giving them the call is fucking wild. So,
And the weirder part is that like they're going 3-0, and like I know, like I hate the narrative that like Travis Kelce is washed now because of Taylor Swift, because it's not the case. But him being ineffective for the last three games, and I also feel like he's about to have a fucking major game. He's about to have like this like betting
we're
on him.
Yeah, we're three games into the season. Like who the fuck knows? Like you know, I think that they. Or we're talking about during the Falcons game that like they kept bringing that up. And, but like, it's also the idea of like, you can't not cover Kelce. Like,
yeah,
he has made such a name for himself that like, you know, when Tony Gonzalez was playing, were there stretches of games where it's like, oh, Tony hasn't really caught a pass or done much. Like, yeah, but he's still doing something by being on the field, because if you then go like, oh, they're not throwing it to Tony. He's not getting any targets. And then you're pulling your coverage to whoever. Okay. Well, that's when Tony starts getting his targets. Like,
exactly.
You're right. It's that kind of thing. You can't not fucking cover Travis Kelce, man. Like it's the minute you let up on that, it's just like, oh, that's when he lights your ass up. So.
Yep. And so and he has so many like they're like Midwest. They're like the Midwest Patriots. They have so many goddamn targets. And Mahomes is just so slippery about things. Like, I now understand why people like I now understand the other half of it. Like, because like I said, I'm not a huge KC fan, but like I like watching them play and I understand the hatred. Because I was on the opposite side. I now understand why so many people loved watching the Patriots. I just couldn't get behind it. I just absolutely couldn't get behind it because I hated their coach. I love Andy. Like, the mustache has been around all my life, literally all my life. Like, as a growing up as a kid, like I've seen him in other capacities for other teams. And like, doesn't it all go back to like hating Philly for mishandling most of their coaches and like just
and doing quarterbacks them like
and quarterbacks,
you know, like they always wanted to blame. They wanted to blame Andy Reid. They wanted to blame Donovan McNabb. And it's like, dude, like Andy Reid's the fucking man. Like, how do you not see that? Like that's why it makes it difficult to fucking appreciate anything sports-wise Philadelphia because their fandom is so fucking toxic. Not all of them, just most of them. It's ridiculous. Like, I wish to God Andy Reid had been coaching the Falcons. Like, he'd still be coaching the Falcons, probably. Cool. And maybe it's the team I've always wanted it to be. Like, maybe all of the weapons they've had in the last fucking 15 years don't go completely unappreciated. So,
like, Matt Ryan has 2 Super Bowls instead of none.
Yeah.
Right?
So, it's maddening.
Yeah. And, like, the amount of... Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's just... That's also why it's so frustrating to see the refs lean towards that. It's because it's like, I like this team. I like these guys. I want to continue to like these guys. If they win, they win. That's fucking great. Could you not just hand it to them?
Exactly, because they're going to do it on their own. Like, that's the thing that I was, like, thinking about is that, like, so if you didn't do the PI and you gave them the touchdown, the Falcons, it becomes a game, like, it becomes a 24-22 game, and it forces Mahomes to be great. And the 2-minute drill, right?
And if he does it, he does it. Like, exactly. You know?
But you don't let it out. You don't let the steam out, right? Yeah. Like, you just don't give them the fucking game. Because that's something that I can't abide by.
The Falcons Super Bowl loss to Brady. Yep. I don't put that on the refs or on, like, it's purely a failure on the Falcons for losing that game. Well, the Falcons game.
Coaching staff.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest. But we know.
Yes.
Go ahead.
To your point, like, Brady came out there and did what he was supposed to do. The Falcons didn't execute on their end. Like, I still don't like Tom Brady. And, like, you know, yes, there's all the scandals involving him. But, like, I also don't see how deflating footballs necessarily leads to anything. But, I mean, I get you're not supposed to do it and the rule is the rule or whatever. But I also don't understand how that's a clear competitive advantage. If it is for him, it's for everybody else too, right? So anyway, point being, Brady did what he was supposed to do. The Falcons didn't execute. If in that game the Falcons are up and then Mahomes comes out there and does what Mahomes can do, what the Chiefs do, what they can do, and march down the fucking field and the Falcons don't execute on defense, then that's a failure on the Falcons. It's not the refs giving the Chiefs a fucking one up. Like,
no.
If they're going to win, let them fucking win by their own merit. Like, if the rules are the rules, then follow the fucking rules for everybody. That's what makes it frustrating. You know, like, I've watched a lot of calls go Brady's way. I watched a lot, but, like, I am leaning more towards, like, a lot of people. Like, it's getting ridiculous the amount of shit that goes the Chiefs' way. And then when it happens on the other team, it's like, oh yeah, no, that's definitely, it's not going to go their way. Like, it's getting ridiculous. So,
I'm going to say something and I feel it, and it's not crazy talk. Because we've seen refs are fucking like degenerate gamblers. I would not put it against all of them to be putting on putting bets on the three-peat to make money.
Yeah, I mean,
let's just be honest.
It's all the more reason. Like, if Goodell's not going to do something, you got to fucking go, man. Like, you got to go. Like, we got to start. I don't know. Maybe PI should be a reviewable fucking call. So
every time, like, even though it slows down the game,
like, even care. If you don't call it and it's there, they should be able to challenge that. Like, you did it. It was there. That one in the end zone, the dude is staring at it. Like, Yep. What is happening? You know, I get these guys are going to get away with things, and you don't want to open the door and slow the game down even more. But this flagrant shit that happens, it's like, oh my God, man. Like, the announcers call it out. Oh, he got away with one there. Oh, like, it's going to happen, man. But there's not nine bodies piled up that somebody can get away with that, something right there. It's just those two people. How are you? You're telling me you don't see this? But literally, you can go back to the week before, and when somebody did the almost the exact same thing to a Chiefs player, it gets called then.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's very frustrating. And again, for a team that I don't want to hate, I don't want to hate the Chiefs. And shit like this is going to make it really difficult to not hate this team.
Absolutely, because cheaters are cheaters. Like, that's all there is to it. Like, that's very, it's very fucking.
Anyway.
Like, even so. If the refs do it. But okay, so, like, you're talking about the Super Bowl. You're talking about the infamous Super Bowl comeback. I have to ask you, how beautiful is it? Because I think that we share a hatred for the Niners for different reasons. But how beautiful is it that this fucking team that everybody fucking loves, all these little white boy receivers and all this stupidity, calling them the new Patriots, are now 1-2.
Yeah.
All of their dudes are somehow injured.
Yeah.
And Shanahan has no answers for it.
Yeah. A guy I work with is a huge 49ers fan, and he gets frustrated with me. And I tell him all the time, I'm like, dude, I don't hate the 49ers as a franchise. I don't really hate any of the players, but if Mike Shanahan never won another fucking game for the rest of his life, I'll be happy. So I'm sorry, but yeah, fuck you. Like, this is karma's a bitch, and it took a while for you to get yours. And, you know, here we are. Like, I mean, I guess you could say that they've been getting their karma, you know. I guess losing to the Chiefs is, you know, maybe karma enough, but not for me. Not for me.
Like, no.
Yeah. I hope they don't even make the playoffs. So.
Yep. And I just don't like, their stank ass team. I don't like any of them. Like, I really don't. I've been on file. Like, if you guys have been following our football podcast that comes up every fourth quarter, you'll know that I have a true distaste for Brock Purdy. But I just don't like him in any way, shape, or form, because he's not what they say he is.
Yeah.
Like, he's just not.
Yeah.
He's not. I'm sorry, guys. He's not. He's fake gold. But, like, I just love that the announcers have anointed him this, like, this godlike creature. Like, and that's the thing that always annoys me is, like, the announcers. Like, I was telling you last night, like, going back to that game, how much they were cheering on and, "You're doing a great job, Daniel Jones. Look at all these completions. Where are the touchdowns? Why did they have seven? Why did they have like six, like five goddamn like field goals? Like, that's all their scoring was. Like, the game was a jank ass, what, 20-15 score. How the hell do you have a jank ass score of 20-15? Like, it's like, I don't know. Like, that just tells me. And I just like, I have this true distaste for like announcers anointing people or trying to, because it's their favorite team, and it's very obvious that it's their favorite team. I mean, Collinsworth on during Sunday Night Football, like, he got annoying as shit during that KC game for me, because even me, I was like, okay, enough talking about the greatness that is Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. Let's talk a little bit about like what's happening on the field. Like, can we just a little bit? Just a little bit, you know. But yeah, it's an interesting season because, like, it almost feels like a repeat of last season, where we were like, the people that we thought were going to be like contenders ended up kind of not being, though some, like, remember last year how, like, everybody was talking about the Chiefs were awash after four games? And, like, literally they were just like, yeah, hold my beer. I'm going to start, we're going to start this. So I don't want to say too much because, you know, the Niners could all of a sudden turn it around and go on a 13 game run and go, or no, I'm sorry, not a 13, a 15 game run and go, 14 game run and go like 15 and 2 and like end up winning their division and end up winning the Super Bowl. But it is just wild to see that, like, Seattle, who thought Seattle would go 3-0? Like, that's what I want to know. Like,
oh yeah, that's yeah. wild.
Like, Seattle and, like, I mean, the Vikings, I kind of expected eventually they would do, though this whole weird Sam Darnold thing, I was like, yeah. What's happening here? What's happening? Again, another fucking washed up quarterback coming out and literally, like, just handing it to the Texans.
Yeah.
Who everybody thought were a contender after, after 2-0, like going 2-0 and like CJ Stroud being, I mean, and I'm not saying that CJ Stroud is not a great quarterback, but great quarterbacks do take their licks. And like, I'm just like, wow, Sam Darnold? I thought that he was already on coaching staff for somebody. Yeah. And here he is doing a Kurt Warner. That nobody wants to do. Like, nobody wants, like, but the funniest part for me, and I don't know if you agree with me, but it's like these guys coming back and doing these things, I don't want them to do these things. I don't want Andy Dalton to like make a run of things. I don't want Sam Darnold. I'm done with the Kurt Warner stuff. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, like, it's nice to watch, but at the same time, I'm like, you know what? I'd much rather have these young quarterbacks try to figure it out because, I mean, it's weird because, like, we're in this dynamic shift right now where, like, I cannot believe that people are actually saying Mahomes is a vet. But, I mean, he's been in the league, what, 8 years now?
Yeah.
He's a vet. I mean, he's a vet. Him, like, he's the, like, you know, he's actually farther ahead of like, you know, when we're talking about chasing Brady, like, he's actually, like, right now statistically he's way ahead of Brady, but then Brady in the twilight of his career was, you know, like, better than Brady at the early part of his career, which is, like, still to me is wild and infinitely hateable. Like, how do you get better at, like, post 35, like, at a game? Like, not even LeBron is like that. And, like, LeBron is, like, the key, right? Like, the guy, like, is going to be 40 this year and is playing one of the most extremely physical sports out there and still doing it. I mean, shit, his son is playing with him. Like, that would be like Tom Brady having his son play, like, receiver with him, right? Like, that's just fucking wild.
Yeah.
So.
Well, a lot of game left to play. And, yep. I mean, we'll see. I've got a dog who... I guess she wants to try to go out again, so we'll see. Maybe the rain has actually stopped. So go check out everything else we've got over at xwingfiles.com, and you can check out our writing over at Adam's website.
Yes, themovieisle.com, where if you want to, you can look, you can see a whole bunch of new reviews. I covered Fantastic Fest. I still had some actual reviews from other things that you can see. Right now, I think that my review for Wolves is up right now, the Brad Pitt, George Clooney movie.
I'm hoping to get to watch that today.
Oh, I hope you do too. It's John Watts returning to what he initially did, which he was doing, which is like it feels like the movie he would have done after Cop Car.
Yeah.
And for anybody that likes John Watts and seeing Cop Car and how great that fucking movie is, it's actually kind of it's very exciting. I think this one everybody's going to be late to because critics are shitting on it, which I don't get. But give it a chance, guys. Really do. And then also, if you're into horror, the prequel to Rosemary's Baby, Apartment 7A, is actually not that bad of a movie. It's a 90, it's 90 minutes. It's got a great sinister Diane Weiss, something I never thought I'd say in the history of cinema.
Nice.
Yeah. A very sinister Diane Weiss. And I know that people love her because she was in that drug show, The Ozarks, Julia Gardner. She's fantastic in it, but mainly see it for Diane Weiss. She's fucking amazing in the movie, which I was genuinely surprised. It's not as good as the First Omen, which is a fucking fantastic movie. I was not expecting it to be fantastic, but this one is good. Like, it's like, if you thought it was going to be crap, give it a chance. It's a smaller, compact movie, but it's effective. It's very effective. I mean, how can you not like a 90-minute horror movie? And like I said, like, if you're thinking that it's going to be bullshit because it's a prequel to Rosemary's Baby, don't go in. And I think you'll be surprised. Modest success. And then Wolves, I just fucking loved. I loved Wolves a lot.
We'll be back next week talking about who the hell knows what. So.
No, no. So maybe the football preview was the preview of what we're talking about.
See you guys soon. Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit. Number 4, Mario. Number 5, Weird Al. Number 6, Batman. Number 7, Cal-El. Number 8, Simpsons. Number 9, TV. Number 10, every single band that I stole all their MP3s. But before they all sold out, see it all together if you're with me now. Nerds,